everyone, and welcome back to Phone Show Chat. It is Monday the 2nd of March, and it is show number 884. Joe is here with me, as always. Hello, Joe.
Hello. It feels like the Phone Mad Show project.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because we're joined today by Sam Bentimiglia, hot from America and Italy, I think. Hello, Sam.
Good day, guys. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Okay, great to have you on as well. You've been on the show before, I think, probably a couple of times, haven't you?
Yes, this would be the third time, so I guess they say that's the charm, right? So we'll see how if I can keep it going. But yeah, this would be time. This would be number three on the show.
Things have changed a little bit since you were last on, because when Steve was running the show with me, we were probably much more structured about how we went about things than we are now. And so it's a bit more kind of free and easy. And I don't intend to put any edit points in except the ones where we've got plugins for audio. So we'll see how we go there. Yeah. Sam and Joe on the Nomad Tech Project, which was on the telly last night. Well, it was on my telly. It was on YouTube. and that is on every Sunday night. Anything you want to say about that before we go on?
No, I guess the only thing is our next show will be show 160, which makes me laugh because I can't even imagine how we've been able to come up with 160 shows. I guess that shows that we don't listen to feedback about how terrible we are. We just keep plowing through and keep doing it. So
I quite like the casual nature of the show, though. I think it works quite well. It's almost like a potpourri of, you just never know what's going to. I mean, you know, last night you were talking about children's names for ages, and it's like, where on earth did that come from? But it was okay. It was all right, you know.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, and I have asked folks, you know, please be, you know, give feedback. You know, obviously we call it the Nomad Tech Project, so clearly it's supposed to be tech focused. And as you can see, if you listen to the show yesterday, I mean, I sometimes come to the show and I don't really have a lot of prep. I just kind of, I didn't even know MWC was happening. I didn't watch any videos about it. And then sometimes we just start have a conversation. And I told Joe the impetus was basically, I wanted to have it where if me and Joe were at a pub, or two guys were talking like at a birthday party where the kids are playing and you're just kind of standing there talking to the other dads and just kind of standing around, what would you talk about? You might talk about foam, but you might talk about sport if you're inclined, or you talk about food you know, something like that. So we try to keep it, and that's the unfortunate part about being as completely wide open as we are. It's just kind of at the nature of really whatever kind of organically spills through the show. So some people will probably find that annoying. But it's been working, and at least you'll be okay.
The only annoying bit for me is the American football.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Yeah. I try to stay away from it just because I know a lot of people that listen to the show probably really aren't. Although I thought in the UK it seems to be kind of starting to become more popular-ish, so it's not terrible. But I also realize that there's people who just aren't feeling it, and so I get that. I'm trying to be sensitive to that.
We went through a stage in the 1980s, I think it was, or was it the 90s, somewhere around the 80s or 90s, where everyone was it coincided with Sky. Everyone was getting Sky's TV dishes, and there was this big movement towards American football, and they started playing it here, and there was leagues here, and it really, I don't know if it still is, Joe, is it, but certainly then. No,
because the UK Raiders, isn't there,
is there?
Yeah. They actually, what they did, and it was right around that time, Ted, so you're probably right, right around that 90s, early aughts, right? It was, they had what was called NFL Europe. So they had, like, a team in Germany and a team in the UK, and they had, you know, they were actually trying to have a small, essentially minor league, or, met, you know, kind of like a adjacent league. It was called NFL Europe. They did it for about 10 years, and it kind of folded because it didn't seem to catch on. So, yeah, I mean, to each their own. I still try to pay attention. They should have, you know, Premiership games on TV here at MSNBC, and I pick them up every once in a while. I don't know who's playing. It's like Chelsea and Liverpool or something, or Crystal Palace and, you know, Tottenham. I don't know these players. I just want to watch the game. So they do televise them in the United States, and it's quite popular. Actually,
I used to really be into football. I almost got membership of the 92 club, which I don't know if you know what that means, but in the UK, back in the day when I was going to football, if you went to all of the 92 clubs in the four divisions, you could claim to have membership of the 92 club. And I was not far off getting there. I think I got to about 75 or something. I was really enthusiastic football fan. It just one day it just went away, and it never came back, and I've got no interest in sport whatsoever now. So really odd.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, you know, people change. It's cool. So that's all good. So we just appreciate you and Steve and folks participate. We really do enjoy that component of the show, for sure. It's cool. One of our favorite things.
PhoneShowChat.uk is our website. That's where you'll find links that we're going to talk about to the things we're going to be talking about today. I can't even speak properly today. All the stuff that we are talking about will be there. There will also be in your podcatcher, and the stuff we get tends to come from the MeWe group, but not exclusively. So links to all of that will happen there as well. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find all those links and all the audio podcasts we do as well. There's a whole ton of them, including a Whatever Works, which came out today. So do tune into that with me and Aidan. We had a right hoot. Now, a bit of feedback from our listeners. A couple of audio plugins here, Joe. So Luke Van Eed is first, and then after that we've got our good friend Malcolm Bryant. Now, Luke Van Eed lives in Australia, and he's just taken delivery of the Motorola Signature, and he sent in a 3-minute, or in fact, I think it's a 2-minute audio clip, which I'll plug in here, and I'll also put a link in the show notes to his unboxing video, which he put up on his YouTube channel as well. But yeah, let's have a listen to Luke, and then we'll come back and have some thoughts about what he's saying.
Hi, Ted and Joe and all the listeners. It's Luke Van Eed here, long-time listener, but I'm not very big in the community. I just got the Motorola Signature, so Ted suggested I send in a little thing about it. And I have a bit of a cold at the moment, so sorry if my voice sounds a bit off. For almost the last 4 years, I've been using the Moto Edge 30 Pro, which has been really, really good, but I thought it's time for an upgrade. I got the 16GB RAM 512GB storage version of the Signature in the Pantone Carbon Color. For pricing, I think in the UK the retail price is £900, but I got this one from an eBay seller selling imported phones because Motorola never bothered to release it in Australia. So after an eBay Plus discount, I got it for $1,300, which converts to about £685, I think. So it's expensive, but not too bad. It's almost exactly the same size as the Edge 30 Pro, but it's a bit thinner. And the screen is larger because it has thinner bezels, so that's always a nice thing. The screen does look very nice. And it has an in-screen fingerprint sensor, which is really fast and accurate. Previously, before the Edge 30 Pro, I had an LG Velvet, which had an in-screen fingerprint sensor, and that was significantly slower and less reliable than a capacitive fingerprint sensor, which is part of the reason why I didn't like the Velvet so much. It has an always-on screen, which is great. I loved that back in the Nokia days. The Velvet had an always-on screen as well, but like the Edge 30 Pro and the Moto Z3 Play, which I also had, they don't have always-on screens. But anyway, so the back of the phone has a really nice textured finish. It feels like some sort of fabric, but I'm not sure what. The whole phone, with being premium, has a really nice feel to it everywhere. The cameras on the back, they're all 50 megapixels, one regular camera, one ultra-wide camera, one periscope telephoto camera. I've used the cameras a little bit so far, but not really in depth. From what I've tested so far, they do seem really good. The periscope zoom lens, that is interesting. I don't usually use zoom much in my photos, but seeing as it has an extra good zoom lens, I might give it a try more often. One thing I am really impressed with is the speaker. It's definitely the best sounding phone speaker I've ever heard. I'm sure some of it is Dolby Atmos doing its magic, but it really does sound good. I haven't used any modern Samsung phones or anything, so I'm not sure how they compare to that, but it's definitely better than the Edge 30 sounded. Performance is really, really good. It has a Snapdragon 8 Gen 5, which is one of the new ones, except it's not the top-of-the-range one. This is like a Gen 5 Ultra or something, I'm not sure. Overall performance is perfectly fast and smooth, as you would expect. If you're into games, it runs things really well. I tested it with a game that I played a bit last year called Infinity Nikki. It runs noticeably better than the Edge 30. With all the graphics settings turned all the way up, it runs perfectly smoothly. It has HDMI out with an adapter. That's the same as the Edge 30. And it has the desktop mode that Motorola has. Ted has talked about that quite a bit. So that is good if you like that sort of thing. It also has 90-watt charging, which it came with a 90-watt charger, but I haven't been able to use it yet because it's an Indian one and I'm waiting for an adapter to arrive. Usually I just charge it overnight with an old Nokia wireless charger. So overall, I'm very happy with the Motorola Signature. It'll be interesting to see what Joe thinks of it when he gets around to reviewing it or whatever. So hopefully this has been a good segment to listen to. Thanks. Bye.
There you go then. Luke, thanks ever so much. It sounds really promising. And I know that, Joe, you're really, really keen to get your SIM card in the Signature, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait to get it in now. But I've finally finished my Razer review, so I can put that up and then put my SIM inside the Signature. Sounds like Luke's got a very nice upgrade there. I'm looking forward to hearing more of his longer-term use.
It's just a shame that he had to kind of get it in a roundabout way from India via eBay and all of this. Obviously, you know, Australia probably not on the number one list for Motorola by the sounds of it. But anyway, Luke, let us know how you get on in the coming weeks and so forth, and we'll happily receive some more audio from you, or come on the show if you want to. You'll be very welcome to do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let us know. Now, the other clip was from Malcolm Bryan, and he was referencing a previous appearance on PSE with me and Steve about 4 years ago, when he was talking about death to bloat and how the whole thing about developers writing a code was bloated, and the OS the mobile OS systems were encouraging that bloatedness. So I'll let you listen to what that Malcolm is saying now, and we'll come back in a second. But essentially, he's updated that, and here are his current thoughts on that.
Hi, it's Malcolm here. I was thinking recently about the huge increase in memory prices, both RAM and storage, that there's been lately. Unfortunately, we're likely to see some pretty significant increase in mobile phone prices across the board later this year as a result. It got me thinking about a conversation I had on PSC with Ted and Steve almost exactly 4 years ago, in an episode we called Death to Bloat. Here's a brief reminder.
I started writing apps for Scion devices. We talked a little bit about that earlier in the show. And of course, they had scarce resources. And so really from force of habit, I keep an eye on the size of apps on my Android phone. And I looked at the first few apps in alphabetical order on my Samsung here. And they were Adobe Acrobat, and it's 251 megabytes. Amazon Alexa, 302 megabytes.
Wow.
Amazon Shopping, and this is, bear in mind that Amazon Shopping really just opens a website using the system web view, so yeah. nothing fancy, 243 megabytes.
Wow.
So yeah. So the question in my mind is why are these apps so large in size, and does it really matter? And I guess yes and no. No in the sense that most modern phones have plenty of disk space and RAM, but yes, in the sense that older phones just become unusable because they don't have the resources to run these apps. And like everyone else, I've got a bunch of old phones. We talked about that earlier. And if you think back a few years to Android 4.4, Android 5, Android 6, you know, I was happily running my apps like Chrome and Gmail and Gmaps and the rest with a 4 gigabyte internal disk. And that was for Android OS and all of my apps, 4 gigabytes. Now we're saying that even 64 gigabytes is too small. Really, we're saying 128 gigabytes is kind of the minimum for modern phones. So that's a 32-fold increase from Android 4.4. And if I think, has the functionality I get from my phone increased 32 times over that period? No, it hasn't.
We went on to talk at some length about some developers being lazy and just not bothering to write efficient and compact code. We also talked about how operating systems are getting ever larger footprints, while the average person probably uses less than 5% of the features. Could we ever go back to where 4 gigabytes of RAM plus 128 gigabytes of storage was considered plenty? The answer is no, of course, it's not going to happen. But then, why not really, if Google and Apple and manufacturers focused on what we really need and got rid of all the bloat? It's an interesting thought experiment, though, isn't it? Back to you at PSC Towers, Ted and Joe.
Thanks, Malcolm. Yes, interesting to revisit that. 4 years, I can't believe it was 4 years ago. But yes, I mean, essentially what you're saying there is that everyone is continuing to be lazy. And because no one's crying out, because hardware is getting more and more capable, developers don't need to use code that is sleek and lean. So any thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I guess for those that use AI, they need that little bit more RAM, so they probably wouldn't survive on 4 gig. And people that favour local storage over cloud storage, they obviously need more storage. But I dare say I could easily survive on, say, 8 gig of RAM maybe, and 128 if I gave my storage a good clean-up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be an interesting experiment.
I suppose it depends on, yeah, how much of the AI you want to use, you know. Mm. If you're going to be really kind of into the AI services, you might need, certainly, as you say, 8 gigs, if not 12. Sam, any thoughts on any of that, the Motorola signature or Malcolm's coding stuff?
Well, the signature looks cool. I found interesting was, and I hadn't noticed this with any of the Motorola devices I've had, because I've had a Razr and I've had, I was actually a big fan of the stylus phones. I used to have a couple.
Yep.
Because they were like 250 quid. Just go buy one. It's like, oh, this is great. And it's got a dead pen, which is hilarious, because then S25 has a dead pen. So, you know, there you go, right? I was more curious to see that he talked about how the audio output was so much better. I never really paid attention to that. I always thought the Moto phones sounded good. Like my Razr sounded fine, and even the budget phones, right? The G Power and the G Stylus. I always thought the speakers sounded really nice, but I never really thought they would be that full and rich. So maybe, you know, hopefully that they've decided to kind of up their game, and, you know, I'm glad that the audio, because I think for me that's something that I think a lot of people don't really think about, because I think, you know, people all got earbuds and headphones and that kind of thing, and with the G series you have a headphone jack, right? So you don't really worry about playing the audio out there. But I still think there are times where, especially if like I'm showing something to my wife, whatever, where I don't want to have, you know, I wanted her to hear the audio, the fact that it sounds full and rich, you know, and that kind of thing. I think it's kind of a feature that I didn't really think about. So that's pretty interesting on the signature. We won't get it in the United States. I'm pretty sure.
Well, apparently the signature, sorry, not the signature, the Fold I was reading today, which we'll come to later, but apparently the Fold, they are going to, not too far away, release that in the United States. So if they start doing well with that, they might do the signature. You never know.
Yeah. And then with Malcolm's stuff, and we talk about code, and, you know, that's a long conversation, and I kind of work in production support. So I'm not a developer per se, but our application is pretty legacy, and there's a lot of dead code in there, and there's a lot of things that, as we're transitioning to other services and looking at that, there's always, the problem is, and I'm sure it happens to these large companies, is when they're transitioning from, you know, whatever, they're doing builds and release candidates, and they have to do smoke and regression testing on these builds. There's a lot of things in there that just, like, instead of just, like, ripping the code out, it's so old and kind of nebulous, it's better just to wallpaper it over and basically just basically comment it out. Yeah. And just leave it in there. And then the problem is at some point, that tech debt is going to have to be cleaned up, right? Either through a code rewrite, and some of these applications, there's just not enough development time, and with ours especially, you just don't have enough time. It's like, you know, when you have managers saying, hey, we have to have this done and this done and this done, that tech debt and that go back and clean up old dead code, you know, if you just comment it out and you're not using that code, it just sits there. And I guarantee Android, if you actually look at its complete code base, I guarantee there's a bunch of wallpapered over dead code stuff that just, they just would screw it. Just turn it off. Who cares? It's, you know, whatever. And the problem is over decades, you know, of development that, you know, that just sits there. And so I get it. And it's, I didn't understand that too. I would be, you know, I don't, you know, fault these companies for it, but remember, at the end of the day, no matter how much money they still have to have developers and people go in there and clean these things up and do the work. And
well, one of the big complaints about Windows always, isn't it? That, you know, if you,
yeah,
over so many years, they've just not done it very well.
Right. And then again, and sometimes at some point, you know, even though it's dead code and even though you've probably bypassed it or worked around it or just, you know, don't use it, that code still sits heavily on your server and your infrastructure. And then especially if you're going to go to these cloud services like, you know, AWS or Azure or whatever, you know, then you have to deal with that code base. So it's, yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's, there's a lot into that. So that's a longer conversation for not this show. We don't need to talk about it. It's complicated. Yeah.
Okay. Going back to Motorola, Mark Surrey leapt into the group also and said that he's just got a bargain, an absolute bargain, a Motorola Edge 70. £499 on Motorola UK's website, including a charger, a pair of Buds Loop, which are great, a Moto Tag, I've got one of those, never use it, and a Watch Fit, which is also great. And he did say that because he got such a good deal, £499 for all of that lot, he's going to try and jump into our next Ted and Joe Go Live on the 23rd of March, which we're going to be doing then, and he can let us know what's going on. But a good deal, eh?
Yeah, it's a real cracking deal with that. Looking forward to Mark dropping in on the show, hearing his thoughts on that one. Hopefully I get the Edge 70 next on the Motivator program. No, I'm lying, actually. I want the Razor Fold, but that's not going to happen, is it?
I don't know. We'll come to the Fold in a minute and pick it apart a bit. But the Edge 70, the only thing that I don't like about the Edge 70, I think, is the fact that it's got no always-on display. And I've checked that and double-checked it, and sure enough, it hasn't. It's about time all of the Motorola models, particularly with these newer, bigger batteries, silicon carbon batteries, that they can do this, you know, apart from the cheapest ones. Anyway, that's a rant for me for another day. Let's get on to Guest Gala and open the floor up for Sam, and let's find out what you want to talk about. The floor is yours as long as you want, Joe, Sam, and we'll try and keep up with you.
No, it's okay. I try to keep it pedestrian. So I do have to have in the notes, it has this program with an MME. I don't know what that, I don't spell it. I'm just kidding. I'm just giving you guys a joke. it's the thing where Joe and I were talking about yesterday about, what was the word, Joe? Beta. Oh, but beta is another one. We call it beta, but I've heard it called beta. What was the other?
Yeah, it's privacy and privacy.
Privacy, right. Privacy. Mm-hmm. So I call it that. Again, that's my American showing through, so what are you going to do?
Joe shouldn't attack you so badly on that stuff, because after all, it is an American show.
Right.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
and the funny thing he had mentioned is that that there are people in the UK that don't say privacy. They say the privacy. I'm like, oh, that's weird.
A lot of people do, yeah.
Because in the United States, nobody would say it that way. No American that I've ever run to. No. So it's just interesting. So
yeah.
I saw that the S26 came out, and I thought looks pretty cool. The privacy screen is kind of neat. I really think that's a pretty good innovation. It sounds like they've been working on that for – say, what, 4 or 5 years on the display to try to get that to work. I think for people who are privacy focused, especially in like on a bus or a train or whatever, I think it's a pretty awesome situation, especially since you can turn it on and turn it off as needed, depending on what you are working with. Whereas if you had a screen protector, an overlay, you just kind of stuck with that all the time. I thought that was a pretty good deal. I don't know. And but then I also, of course, like anything, you got that, and then you got people all up in arms about the 1200 charge cycle thing. And I saw your notes that you type in there, Ted. And I think for most people, I think you're probably spot on. I don't think most people are going to really pay attention to it. Although I'm curious.
I've got a confession to make. Yeah. That's actually come from Gemini.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? AI for the win, right? No. And it's, but I just noticed, I always ask people, I don't know how many times I actually do, like how many charge cycles I have in a standard year for my devices. I don't think I've ever really like tried to identify what that was, like going from January 1st to December 31st. And actually, well, I had this year, I had 297 charge cycles.
I'll just quickly stop you, Sam. Sam, you don't have one phone for a whole year. That's partly why.
Well, I don't have one phone forever. Like I
exactly,
got, well,
exactly.
Right, and so because I got the OnePlus 15, and I went all in. Right, I already had a OnePlus Pad because I got as you guys say, a Kraken deal, which is I love that terminology. By the way, that stuff great makes me that just makes me smile. There's a lot of things that the British populace does. Just terminology. What was the other one? Billy Nomates. I love that.
Really, no,
I'm gonna start using that, and then people are gonna look at me when I use the terms that Joe and I kind of come up with at work and socially. People kind of look at me like a dog, you know, and they kind of look at me, turn their head, and go, "Like, what did you just say?" Like I told my boss about the no kit wanker thing, and they had no idea what I was talking about.
It's full kit.
Yeah, no full kit wanker, right? So I'm like, "What's a full kit wanker?" And so I explain it to them. They're like, "Oh, yeah." Okay, yeah, that makes sense, but it's like, why would you say it that way? It's like, yeah, it's what happens when you hang around a guy from the UK all day and you have a show with him. He starts to rub off on you. I don't know.
You're quite right, Sam, because there's not really anywhere you can go apart from drilling down into the data of each individual phone to get the charge cycle for across the board with anything.
Yeah, I guess you would figure, think about it. You have 350 plus days in a year. Do you charge your phone daily? I would guess people like us that are on our phones very much and often probably would, but I'm curious to people like, like other people who maybe don't use their phones very much or, and also what is a full charge cycle? Is that from 0 to 100? Because I don't know about you, but do you charge your phones that way? Because I kind of don't. I mean, if I'm in the car, I have an hour commute to work. And so a lot of times if my phone's on like 35, 40%, I don't charge it overnight a lot of times because I have SuperVOOC now, which, full disclosure, if you don't have SuperVOOC, you should get you some SuperVOOC. That should be a thing on every phone. Just to charge it up that quickly, it's just nuts. Mm-hmm. But when I'm in the car and I'm driving, I just put it into a little charger in my Mini, and I drive to work, and then by the time I get to work, it's like 85% or so. So I don't really go for – would they consider that a full cycle, is my question.
GSM Arena are saying that a cycle definition is defined as a battery going from 100% down to 0%, and unless it does, it won't count as a cycle.
Okay, so you would think if you're like doing these micro charges, I wonder how many – would that count in the 1200? Maybe it's – 3 micro charges count as a cycle total. Like, I don't think people really charge their phones that way, Ted and Joe. No, maybe you guys do. I sure as heck don't. So I don't know. I think there's much like, but I do agree with this. I think it's much ado about nothing. I think it's just one of those points that it's something that's gone from 2000 to 1200. So of course, since it's regressed, people want to clutch their pearls and take their banners and torches and, picks and go stand outside Samsung headquarters in Seoul and complain about it. But I honestly don't think the charge cycle thing is really, really a problem with that. I think for most people, I think they can get around it. I just don't think it's that big idea.
And the whole thing about keeping a phone for 7 years, which probably very few people, I mean, you might hand it on to a relative who would want to continue using it, I suppose, but most people are unlikely to hold onto a phone for 7 years, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think that was, remember when you started hearing the comments from like Google and Samsung, hey, we have 7 years of software support. That's a great thing to have, but But I think it talks more about, I think it's more performative than really functional, because to your point, Ted, I don't think anybody's keeping their phone for 7 years. And realize, if you're giving it to a family member or like a kid or a younger person, I mean, I don't know, half the time I talk to my parents, they were running like iOS 13. And they're like, hey, and the only reason my mother-in-law upgraded her iOS on her older iPhone was because the app she used to use didn't work anymore, because it was broken on, it had to be upgraded to iOS 14. And she goes, hey, I noticed that this app doesn't run. I go, Mom, let me look at your phone. And she's like seven versions behind. I'm like, Mom, have you ever updated it? She goes, update what? I go, the phone. You got to update the version of iOS. I don't know how to do that.
And this is part of the problem, Sam, is I've got a Pixel 9 here, and there's already things that are on Pixel 10 that are not included on Pixel 9. So right. They are encouraging, by the back door, people to upgrade every year ongoingly. Right. Instead of, I think you were talking on your show about some of them, you know, being encouraged to not bring out new devices, maybe once every 2 years, not every year, to avoid this drive of overproduction all the time.
Well, yeah, Joe made a great comment, and something we've talked about before. I know Juan Carlos Bagnell talks about it, is e-waste, right? So every year we generate these phones, and you know, he works at a shop where people are coming in, and he definitely has his finger on the pulse of consumers, because he's dealing with the people that come in every day to a carrier store. Mm-hmm. But I just think at the end of the day, I'm like, I understand why companies do it, because it's profit driven, right? Their whole business is to drive profit for shareholders and that more money to develop phones. I get all that. But I'm wondering how long this yearly cycle is sustainable. And I'm curious to see if one company decides, you know what, this year, we're not going to do an S27 in 2027. We're going to skip a year. Matter of fact, and to keep the year and the alignment, right? So 26 and 26, right? We're going to skip the 27 altogether, and we're going to come out the S28 range in 2028. We're going to skip a year and let people. I'm curious. I'm wondering if some company has enough stones to actually do that, and see how it goes. I think you don't need to upgrade every year. I just really don't think you need to. Mm-hmm. That's just a personal opinion.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I've got a Fairphone 5 here, which is supposed to be getting 10 years of updates, but they're not doing what Google are doing with Pixels. They're not every year pushing new services, AI this and Gemini that, and all these new things that need more RAM and all the rest of it. You get a bare bones Android experience with a Fairphone, which is why they're so confident that in 8, 9, 10 years' time, that people who are expecting less will still be okay with it.
Right, especially when you can just figure they're probably just scraping off a lineage build and just AOSPing it in there, right? Which is fine. I mean, I'm okay with that. I remember back in the day. You know, they still make, ROMs for phones that are older in 5 or 6 years, where they're mm-hmm. older. You can, and I think that's one of those lost arts, right? I really kind of miss the days of custom ROMs and kind of having. I understand why people don't do it. And I get, but I think both things can be true at the same time. Right. Mm-hmm. I think you can service people, and then people who like, I don't care about that. I just want the phony phone. I push the buttony button and it does a thingy thing. Right. I get that. You got those people. But then you've got people like me, or people like you, obviously, Ted. I know this probably hits home, is where you kind of have an older phone. It's sitting in a drawer. You're like, I'm going to unlock this bootloader. I'm going to kind of see if I can kind of mess with this thing a little bit. And then you go on Lineage and go, holy cow, they're, yeah.
I did this last week, Sam, just out of interest. I got a Pixel 3 here, and it had Lineage 19 on it, and I wanted to update it to Lineage 22, the latest one.
Right.
And I amazed myself, because I actually did it. I got a lot of help from Gemini in the process, and it was complicated, but I got there, and I was very pleased with myself.
Yeah, but I mean, just because, you've got these phones, and it's just like, obviously, it's if you're inclined, and if you're not, that's okay. That you're probably not a person like me that's got literally a drawer full of phones, as Joe likes to give me trouble about, right? You're all these phones in a drawer. But it's one of those things where for people like Ted, even if you don't, but if you're just inclined and you're kind of a little bit of a tech kind of nerd and you want to kind of get in there and just kind of go, you know what, I'm going to go buy an old Pixel 4a or you know, a Pixel 3 XL or whatever, and just, you know, or even if you want to go completely crazy, right, go back to a 6P or a Moto. My argument is I love the 6P, but the Moto 6, Nexus 6, was my favorite phone. I love that device, man. That was such a great. But to pick that thing up and then, you know, because it's such an old phone, go in there and find people who have Lineage builds or whatever. When I had my HTC, I used to do one called Android Revolution. It was actually a Sense-based ROM, and it was kind of new because then you could change all the UI colors. It was really kind of cool. And I miss that kind of stuff, you know, and flashing a Google Play edition on your you know, HTC One M8 just for giggles, right, just because you could. I kind of miss that fun part of Android, the kind of the frontier of Android where people can go in there and do that. I kind of miss that, and I think you can do both.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, on the other hand, it's really nice when stuff just works, and particularly when you like what a manufacturer is doing. I noticed in the recording notes here that you kind of got into bed with OnePlus, and I'd be interested to hear about how that's going for you, given that, you know, OnePlus is a BBK group, which you've got to kind of be on board with the ethos with being happy with that. So do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, to be fair, full disclosure, I've kind of been on the OnePlus bandwagon ever since the OnePlus 1. The original OnePlus, right. First of all, you had me at CyanEngine. I'm like, I'm in, right? I'm all in. And, you know, I've had success of the OnePlus devices. I've had the 3 and the 3T. Actually, the phone, my daughter, who went back, it was kind of funny, she was on iOS, and I thought she was a young lady here in the U.S., and I thought there's not a chance in hell she'll ever go back to an Android phone. But now she's back to a Flip 7 because she saw the Flip. But anyway, one of her favorite phones was the OnePlus 6. She loved that phone, and I did too. So I'm not new to the OnePlus game. So years ago, I actually bought one of those cracking deals, you guys like to say, on a OnePlus pad. It was actually like I got it for like $180. So I bought that and even had the cover and everything. So it was a pretty sweet deal. And so I'm thinking about it. And I've had a OnePlus 11, and I had the OnePlus 13 for a little bit, but I took it back just because I was actually at one point where I have too many phones. I probably should buy another phone. That was a very, clearly I need an intervention is what it is. I have a very big problem. Anyway. So I thought, I'm going to get the OnePlus 15, and I've had the Plus Pad, and of course they connect each other. It was great. And the funny thing is, when I bought the OnePlus 15, the gentleman I bought it from had the Sandstone case and the OnePlus Buds Pro 3 with it. It was kind of weird. It was like $900. I'm like, it's a pretty good deal. And it was all factory sealed, right? Never touched. And so I'm sitting there going, okay. Now, the practical person should say, Sam, you already have a Galaxy Watch 6 Classic, Wear OS. You already have a one. You actually have an original Pixel Watch and a Pixel Watch 4, right? Again, Wear OS. My dude, you could probably just go ahead and get through that. And then I looked at a OnePlus Watch, like, I'm going to be a good person, and I'm not going to do it. And then I saw one come up for $170 factory wrapped, and I'm like, you know what? I think the man upstairs is calling to me. I think he's telling me that this is probably good. So I literally got the watch today, Ted. So it's literally on my wrist. I send it. And it's funny. I tried to turn the crown. I realized that this doesn't turn. It's the 43mm one. So I just thought it was interesting because when I powered the watch on, I had my phone and it immediately said, hey, watch is available. You want to pair it? I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So I don't know. I'm all watch. I am pad. I am phone. I am earbuds.
Tell us about the phone.
I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, tell us about the phone, because some people, I think, when it came out, were complaining that they were kind of downgrading the photography part of it in lieu of other things. So tell us what your findings are on that.
Well, and Joe and I have had this conversation before, and so Joe is very much a photography-focused man. That matters. And for me, photography has always been, on a phone, has been a nice to have, but never a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. So for me, if you're telling me, but I looked at, I guess I look at the cost benefit of it, right? So I look at, okay, what is the phone upgrading? Not the things that I would upgrade, but just overall in its totality. Let's do if you're telling me you're just sitting there and you have a T-square, right? Pluses and minuses. And if you say all these things, and the only negative is the fact that the camera hardware is not as good, it lost Hasselblad, so the pictures are not as good, anymore as other phones, but all this other stuff is so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, again, it depends, right? For a person who's photography focused, Ted, that's probably not going to work for you because you got to have all the things, right? It's got to have the best camera. My argument would be you should be like Joe, and if you're really into photography like that, you probably should get a standalone DSLR or mirrorless camera and be that guy. Sure. I get it. It's not practical. It's not practical to take everywhere, but I actually think the camera's pretty decent. I mean, is it the best camera I've ever had on my phone? Hell, I don't know, because I don't even pay attention. I don't pixel peep. I see a picture of my dogs, or I'm outside and I see a boat on the horizon. I kind of take a picture of it and I move on with my day.
The specs of the cameras look all right to me.
Yeah.
To be fair, the comparisons I've seen, it holds up pretty well. Like, it's just the fact that they downgraded from the previous model. That's the only thing. And you know what it's like year to year. They like to shout about things, the YouTubers, about what's better and what's worse. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, Ted, you're probably right. So, like, you know, for OnePlus, it was always kind of the one kind of knock on it, right? Is like they got the Hasselblad, and everybody's like, okay, the OnePlus 10, the OnePlus 11, and the 12. And they're like, they're finally starting to focus on the things that we care about, right? The cameras. Clearly not everybody, but most people. And I think when they got to the 13, people were like, I think OnePlus finally got the camera situation like sorted out. It's like a proper good put in the bin, right? Yeah. And I think that's what I think people.
But it has got a whacking great big battery, which the last one didn't have, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's 7300 milliamp. It's silicon carbon. And I'm telling you, I never had battery anxiety anyway. So that's mm-hmm. probably, I'm probably the wrong person. But
right.
just using the. Phone, the Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 5, everybody's like, well, it doesn't really matter. It's overpowered. I'm telling you, when you start using this phone, it's so amazingly fast. It's almost like bonkers. And I'm not even a gamer on phone. I don't game. I have a Switch. I have a PlayStation. I do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm not off the foldable life because I still have my Fold 7. But I have not, in the last 14 days I've had this phone, I have not even thought about going back to my foldable. Like, I have not even – it's such a great phone, and the color is great. You know, the camera housing, I mean, come on, folks. I mean, really, maybe it's not the best camera housing you've ever seen, but, you know, I do like the circle. I thought that was a pretty good design element for OnePlus because I think it made it look unique. But, man, the phone itself, it is better in every single way other than the cameras that I can think of compared to any other slab phone. And I have a Pixel 9 Pro XL. And honestly, it blows that thing out of the water performance-wise. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't when it comes to the software features, clearly, because I do miss Now Playing. That's really some software features I miss.
Right, so. Yeah. I would kind of agree with you on that one. I'm just looking at the UK OnePlus website at the OnePlus 15, and it's £879, which puts it up in the same territory as the Honor Magic 8 Pro and the Oppo Find X9 Pro and that kind of territory. So I guess it's just what you fancy. Presumably this is running Oxygen and not Color, is it?
Correct. It's Oxygen OS. And actually, I had made a comment. Somebody had said to me, and Joe, you can keep me honest about this. I don't remember who said it, but they were like, honestly, I think the Oppo version of that phone, I don't think the cameras are as good as the actual OnePlus. I think they're pretty – everybody's like, well, it's just because it's the Oppo. It's definitely better. But I think it just – at the end of the day, it's if it became a potato camera, clearly that's going to be a problem. But I honestly think it's like this thing with Samsung. I think anytime that a phone has to make compromises or decides to not prioritize some certain things – the people who really prioritize that thing are all up in arms about it. And then they just make a lot to do about nothing. But I wish I had access to an Honor, because I told Joe, we've always had this conversation, because in the United States, we don't have access to Honor or Huawei or really any of these phones, right? Even Motorola, like a company that has been in the American market for, you know, probably 15 or so years, that's not available. So I like the Honor. I think it'd be great to be able to buy that off a shelf or walk into a Best Buy and pick one up. I really thought that would be a pretty good deal, actually. So
sure. But they've also released much cheaper the 15R as well, which has again got not so good cameras, but the battery again is really, really good on the 15R. So I think £549 that is, the 15R, and that's I think pretty good value for money, to be honest. That is the 256 gigabyte version. But I like this OnePlus stuff. I like you said, Cyanogen before it and the Oxygen OS. I think there's a lot to like in there. So I'm with you, I think.
OnePlus 15 is them going back to their roots, isn't it? Because they've never been renowned for their cameras before. There's all about their slick software and gaming and having a nice experience on your device. Everything being fast charging, and this is them going back to their roots and being better value. Obviously, they didn't quite do that with the 15, but it's still good. It's cheaper than some flagships, and it's partly with Oppo as well. Obviously, they're part of the same company, and what they wanted to do is differentiate them. So Oppo are the camera focused phone, and OnePlus have gone back to their roots as the more gaming sort of fast experience sort of phone. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense, doesn't it, as a group to do that. But the gap, as you say, Sam, between the Oppo and the OnePlus isn't quite as big as what some people think from the comparisons I've seen. I've not personally tested them both, but it's not that bad.
And again, all the things that OnePlus really is doing right now is amazing. Like I have not been like blown away by a phone in a long time. The last time I was really blown away by a phone was really my Surface Duo. I was just like, and that really wasn't because of performance. Clearly, it had a degraded processor, right? The 55 and 6 gigs of RAM. It was the fact that it was so fun and easy to use, and it just worked all the time. That's what I liked about the Duo, but I haven't had a chance. Again, unfortunately, I've only had the watch for a few hours, so there won't be an official review, and there definitely won't be an unboxing because that's not my jam. That's more Joe's sphere of nobody wants to listen to me do anything other than the podcast, and that's probably shaky at best. So at the end of the day, this is really the first time I've really had, I guess, a pretty decent sized ecosystem having a watch, but now I have, you know, a watch for each Google watch, and I have a Samsung watch, and now I have the OnePlus. And I don't know, I've really enjoyed the experience so far. And actually, I'm old school enough to remember back in the day, they used to have Hydrogen OS builds that you could flash on your older phones, which was the Chinese version of Oxygen OS, Hydrogen OS, and you could flash that. Of course, then it was a language problem because there wasn't an easy way to, like, and then of course you had all this weird stuff, and some of the language you couldn't change it. So I remember flashing some Hydrogen OS builds back in the day and going, okay, I don't know what to do with any of this because my Mandarin is not very good and I can't read this. So I've been a fan of OnePlus, so I think, like Joe said, I think he hit it on the head. I think they've kind of gone back to the roots about bleeding fast performance, having the first phone with a Snapdragon, you know, Gen 5, and really just about performance and speed and and coming in a little less, although that gap is closing, than, you know, phones like the iPhone and the other phones. It's pretty good. I mean, not for everybody, obviously, but it's not a bad. I've enjoyed it so far.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I like the OnePlus, and Joe, you do as well, don't you?
I'm a huge fan.
You've got the watch as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I was going to say, Ted, I'm not currently using it because I got the Moto Watch Fit. Would you like to test it out?
I wouldn't mind, but I haven't got a OnePlus phone. That's the trouble.
It pairs quite nicely with any Android.
I do get that. As Sam was saying, you know, if you get the stuff working together, you're bound to get the best service from it, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
But I'll take you up on your offer and have a look at it. Perhaps when you send the razor back over, you could chuck it in if you're not using it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah,
that'd be great. OnePlus, we're all on board with you with that, Sam. Where else should we go? What do you want to talk about apart from that?
Oh, I don't know. I guess the only other thing I was thinking about the other day when I was talking with Joe is, is we were talking about like the MWC and the IFA and all these like trade shows. I'm wondering how long with the cadence of leaks and all this other kind of stuff, I'm curious, Ted, to pick your brain about like what do you think about these shows? Because obviously for people like us, you know, we got the leaks, we can watch the videos, and by the time the show comes around, it's almost anticlimactic, right? You already kind of know what's going on, you know the specs, you've already seen like the privacy screen, you probably already would have known about it if you were even moderately paying attention to the chat. So how do you see those going? Because I never watch any of those keynotes anymore. I've never really watched them, but I'm less interested now just because by the time I get to the keynote, I already know about the features, and they're almost always really like, hey, we got the greatest camera with all the Terra flippy flops, and this is the greatest camera ever. It's like you say that every year, but is it the greatest camera? I think it's subjective. I was curious when it comes to these trade shows, do you see them going forward forever, or do you think that that's kind of like at some point, because they release all this data about these phones and you can pay attention to it, that it kind of – they're kind of like, I mean, I'll watch them maybe, but I was curious how you felt about that, because me and Joe were talking about that the other day.
Well, trade shows are not just for tech or phone industries. Trade shows have been going on for, you know, forever. You know, the boat shows and the car shows and the... Everyone wants to go to some sort of razzmatazz event, and I don't think that's going to go away. They'll still want to do that. In our world of phones, I actually, like you, I think I've started to not watch them absolutely every single time they come round. However, for some reason, I was sat here the other day, and MWC was rolling, and I got this YouTuber, prompt to say the Honor announcement is coming along. So if you want to watch it, be here in 20 minutes. And so I decided, well, I was a bit doing nothing that day, and I decided that I would do it and I'd watch it. And actually, it was quite interesting in some ways. Yes, at the end of it, you've got to say that there's nothing we didn't know about these devices and what they're talking about. It's all been leaked, and the leaking is a tease thing. It's building suspense, not suspense. It's building interest by leaking and you know, at the moment, nothing are doing it really well. Every day they're telling you something a bit more about the Nothing 4A, which is going to be properly announced, you know, in a couple of days, on the 5th, I think it is. But every day they're leaking something, just a little bit more, a little bit more. And if you notice, they're holding back on the 4A Pro. No one's saying anything about the 4A Pro.
Right.
So you can see the mentality of the logic of teasing it bit by bit. And it's like any kind of tease, really, isn't it? Going back to the Honor demonstration, they had the dancing robot there, and we had seen that on a video, but when they brought it to the stage and they did a demonstration, it was kind of interesting. And the robot phone as well, which was the gimbal thing, we hadn't quite seen as much as they were showing us on that show. I do think that trade shows are not going to go anywhere, and whatever you think about people being, flown off to them, and whether or not you can trust what they say about these review when they do their reviews. Laying that aside, I think that the shows will continue.
Yeah, and again, that commentary isn't predicated on the fact that I think they should go away. I just think the impact is less because of what they do, and my feelings about the fact that, you know, reviewers and it's a touchy subject, because I'm not a reviewer. So I'm only a consumer of a person who is of people who review phones. Right. So I never want to try to get into the space of, like, I know their motivation. I realize that they're just a shill and everything. However, I guess it's not so much about the fact that they got flown out and they're being paid to be flown and they're doing their job. Right. It's more about the fact that I can't remember the last time a phone launched. Back in the early days when we were covering phone, Ted's, I'm sure you can find a phone that was just like like the red hydrogen or whatever, that red phone or whatever. There were phones that have come out that were just kind of like, okay, this thing is a kind of an epic fail, right? I think we're to the point now where all the phones have come out. You know clearly that this is a budget-friendly phone or a mid-range device or a flagship device. I don't think any of these phones anymore come out and they're like, dude, this thing is just a steaming pile of garbage. Like, everything about this phone, cameras are terrible, battery life is awful, display is 720p, yuck, right? You know, none of these phones come out that way anymore. So
HMD do a good job at that.
Yeah, they do. Right. Yeah.
Sometimes they just put off phones. You're like, why are you even trying anymore? Shouldn't you just tap out? It's like, okay, you guys have just kind of gotten your butt whipped. You guys should just go, you know, it's been a good run. We've had about eight and a half, 10 minutes of good times. We're out of here, right? Okay, we're done, right? But at the end of the day, it's like, I don't think it's like, what are they really reviewing? It's like, okay, you know, the cameras. Again, we've all learned as tech enthusiasts, as tech consumers and content creation consumers, is it's really a lot of it subjective. I can take 100 people and say, hey, I took this picture with an Oppo, and they're like, that thing's trash. This is white balance, brr, Pixel Pete, right? And then you've got other people like, oh, it's pretty good. Battery life, again, subjective, right? You may have a phone. I've had people say that, you know, I have this phone and I killed it in a day. You can't kill it in 2 days. We're fighting about the subjectivity of it all. And I think it's just like, now it's just like, okay, well, they have this S26. I'm not interested in getting one. I'm not going to purchase one because I haven't bought a slab Samsung phone since the S22 Ultra. But I just think I don't think it's we're kind of to the point where we're matured enough where we're just like, eh. Yeah, it's great to know, and that's nice to see. But at the end of the day, I think everybody's getting these arguments about phones and capability, but I think it's just like vehicles, right? And it's like you buy a vehicle that works for you, and if you know, there's going to be things that you really like about the vehicle, there are things you're not going to really like about the vehicle. And that's the trade-off because nothing's perfect. And, I'm just wondering when we're going to get to the point where a lot of people just watch these phone reviews and they're more really just not informational or not something that you like, I need to see what Ted Samen thinks about this device before I really make a decision about his purchase. Yeah, by the time you're watching Ted's videos, you're probably either doing a confirmation bias, like I'm going to buy this thing, but I need somebody to tell me, yeah, spend your 900 quid on it. It's a good deal, right? Or you're hoping somebody goes, don't buy that thing. It's trash. The camera's trash. But you know that's not a thing, right? I think you've already made your mind up about picking the phone up or the device. I think now we're just working more that way.
I think it's true what you were saying on the show last night about personalities. And I really warmed to Posse Carter. And I could almost, not quite as much as you, but I could almost watch anything that he does. I think I draw the line at, you know, speakers and stuff. I mean, there is some kind of peripheral stuff. But it's his show. It's watching him. He's a performer, and he's basically got a tech TV show, and I enjoy watching him. But yes, you're right. I don't watch him to find stuff out because I generally pretty much know it. I watch it to get his opinion on the stuff that I know about, but not to find stuff out.
Ted's favourite is Mr. Who's the Boss. That's his all-time
favourite. I can't stand him. Oh. I can't stand Mr. Fisher either.
Oh, really? I'm curious. Like, I can understand Aaron. I can kind of get why you're not feeling that guy. But I'm curious with Michael Fisher. I'm without trying to be like, you know, picking your brain about. I'm just curious because I think it's sometimes it's a hit or miss kind of thing with him. I do appreciate his content. I think he does a good job production wise. But I'm curious why he either doesn't rub you, like what about Mr. Fisher doesn't work for you? I've always been curious when people say they don't. It's not their cup of tea.
They're both the same. They both come across as cheesy, overproduced, professional videos that are. That are not honest with Flossie Carter. You get him honest him. He says what he thinks. He doesn't care about language or whatever it is. You get him, the person. With both of those other two people, you get a polished, produced, professional video. Same as Marcus, what's it as well? Brownlee.
Yeah, MKBHD.
They all are just high production, and Michael Fisher, is that his name?
Mm-hmm. He
is an ex actor, and you can see it. You can see when he's performing, when he it's his stage, and he turns into this kind of smarmy. You look at his side glances to camera, and it's all really cheesy. We've had him on PSC. He's a really, really, really nice bloke. I like him a lot, and we had a great time chatting on PSC. But as soon as he gets in front of the camera, he turns into this kind of I've used enough descriptors there, Sam, to paint the picture for you.
No, I think the side glance thing will hit the nail on the head, really, with him. It's, yeah, you've all seen it.
not on our show, because Joe and I really don't kind of go for that. I'm not going to reach out to those folks, because here's the thing. Me and Joe just do a podcast, and we enjoy it. But I don't need to have Michael Fisher on my show to validate the show. Like, I already know what he's going to say. And I would argue that once you get people of a certain strata, you get the who's the boss, you get the Mr. Beast, you get those kind of people. Remember, if they come on if I go on my show and I say a bunch of wacky stuff because I'm complete moron and I don't know what I'm doing, like, people probably were listening to our show yesterday, go, like, he came on the show, he has a tech show, he talks about phones, and he has no idea the MWC even started. Like, what kind of moron is this, right? And I'm like, I don't really care at the end of the day.
Yeah,
but when you have those guys come on, they know if they say something, like, if they make how many times have you read an article, whether it's in the BBC or USA Today or whatever, and you see that so-and-so said they're on a podcast, because you notice now you start seeing they're quoting them off podcasts now. That's something you never really saw 15 year or 10 years ago, right? It's like, oh, this person was on this and this podcast, and they made a comment about such and such. It might be an hour-long conversation. It might be a 20-second.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. Always out of context, and
right.
Yeah, it's not fair.
Well, and it's almost a gotcha game, right? But the problem is people like Aaron and people like Marquez and people like Michael Fisher, they know that exists, and they have to protect the brand because they cannot take damage to their hull. Whereas me, I'm rolling up with a 1,000-year-old battleship that's got wooden oars and, like, cannons. Like, I don't really care. You can put a hole in my side because I don't care. But for those folks, like you said, they have an image, right? It's almost performative now. And they can't come on the Nomad Tech Project or the show or whatever. It's a smaller thing, because somebody may listen to it and say, hey, did you hear Michael Fisher on this little cheesy podcast? He said such and such and this and that, and somebody takes offense to it, and bam, now you're a headline. And so when you get them on the show, they're very performative and protective of their brand. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not throwing shade at that. I'm not saying that's negative. But once you get past that point, Ted, I think if you were to talk to Michael Fisher maybe 15 years ago, maybe it's different. But the Marquez Brownlee now, that's not at his mom's basement or his mom's room, he's not reviewing phones. He's a brand. I mean, he's been on Joe Rogan and he's met President Obama. Okay, well then you're not a normal dude anymore. That's something that we don't do.
Yeah.
You know, and I get your point. And I'm glad you kind of explained it. I just always I like his content, but I also realize too, to your point, that I'm not watching it for, is this going to help my purchasing decision? Is it just more entertainment?
And I'm also annoyed by the constant putting in of adverts in YouTube. And now I know that that's not necessarily the creator's fault. It's YouTube's fault to a degree, because I pay YouTube, I pay Google to have an ad-free environment inside YouTube, and I don't get it because Google could be stopping these creators from putting adverts in for people like me who's paid for an ad-free experience. experience, and they're not doing it. You're not telling me that with all the AI shenanigans that Google can do now, all the clever stuff, they couldn't somehow, for the premium subscribers, pick out the adverts and just give me the rest of it. I don't believe it. They could do it.
Sure, and they could, especially the big brands that are common.
And they're choosing not to. And so every time I think about watching Mr. Fisher,
Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile.
That's it. Every time I think about watching one of those, I just don't. I go straight past it because I know that as soon as the advert will come on, it's just going to be annoying. I know there's a fast forward button, and I know all that, but it just annoys me that I don't get what I'm paying for. Okay, that was it.
So I guess my question is I personally like the people like the Adam Matlocks and the Shane Craigs and the folks that just
Shane low Craig, production value, absolutely,
but they
yeah.
just come out and they say, hey, I'm doing videos.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you like it is. And yeah, I might get some heat for it, right? I might get some pushback. I might get people that tell me I'm 100% wrong. And you know what? They're in the pocket, right? Well, I'm sorry. That's an American football reference. Sorry, Ted, my bad. They're on the battlefield. They're willing to take the hits and they really don't care. I mean, Matlock has had the same, you know, he's just in front of his camera and you can tell he's not making it. It's not super polished. He's just, hey, I have this phone. I tried this phone. I bought it with my own money, or I have it sent to me. Here's what I really think about it. I don't like this. I like that. And Flossie Carter, it's the same thing, right? You look down, it's this top down view. It's got the same, you know, mouse pad. It's just this top down thing. And you get to the point with the Flossie videos, you kind of know when he's going to say the thing, and you kind of wind up saying the thing with him while he's saying the thing, because it's become kind of his thing. And that's why I like YouTube. And I agree with you, Ted, 100%. I think you're spot on.
Shane is really good as well. I put Shane in the same bracket as Flossie Carter. Because the difference is he comes across as honest, the guy, and we've had Shane on the show as well, and he is, he's a lovely bloke. He's really, really nice. And
authentic.
Authentic. He's an honest guy. And you don't get any indication at all that this is overproduced and acting and over the top and just polished and overproduced, and I like him. However, I will say that there is a middle road here. I don't know if you know Martin of the
The Tech Alter.
Yeah, the Tech Alter, yeah. Who does the Friday checkout. I think there's a middle road. I think Martin does that really well. So if you take Mr. Mobile at one end and Flossie Carter at the other, then Martin sits in the middle there. And again, we've had Martin on the show as well, and he's a lovely bloke as well. But he's chosen to not quite do it like Flossie and Shane, but certainly not anywhere like Mr. Mobile. And I think that works really well for him. And it sits in the middle, and he does have adverts on his videos, but he sticks them at the end, so you know I kind of forgive him for that.
Well, also too, is he's an industry insider. He knows what he's talking about. Like he's bringing it not as a commentator, but as an authority on, hey, I've been in this world. And he does a lot of really good research, and it's produced, but it's not produced in a cheesy, performative Hollywood kind of way. It's done with, hey, I got these PowerPoints. Hey, here's what I see. Yep. Here's the pie chart. Here's the thing. And we can have an argument about it, but I think he looks at data points and talks about the data.
And it really, really well researched as well.
Oh, yeah. You can tell when he's bringing that video to the table, he's coming with all the preparation, as opposed to Joe and I, who just basically spitball and come up with a bunch of craziness. But here's the thing. I don't try to sell our show. And me and Joe, and I've been very, very clear with Joe about it, I'm not trying to sell myself as that person. I'm doing this really just for love of the game. Right? I just want to come in there and talk about it. And if people like it, that's great. If people don't like it, well, they can, like I said, luckily we don't charge anybody for it. They can vote with their wallet, right? And I think that's what's lost here about all this. Everybody wants to make much ado about nothing, but really at the end of the day, as a consumer, not only just a paying consumer, but a person who's watching YouTube videos, if you don't like what somebody's doing, just stop watching them. If nobody watches their channel, they're going to see those metrics and go, well, clearly I've done something, right? Vote with your wallet and vote with your time, right? And then, and I think that that's what you can do. You can't get everybody to, well, I don't like Ted. I don't know. Ted says I don't like Mr. Mobile, so I should like Mr. Mobile because Ted does it. Well, maybe I don't have to. But at the end of the day, I think if you decide that this person's not worth your time, instead of getting online and typing out a paragraph and a half about how this person has ugly hair and they have a snaggle tooth and their wife or girlfriend or boyfriend is probably a not very nice person, just do what you do and just basically don't watch the channel and just move on with your life. I don't understand the energy that takes to be animosity.
I'd just like to clarify that I do like Michael Fisher.
He seems like a nice guy.
He's a lovely bloke. It's only his overproduced videos I can't stand.
And these people seem like nice people, and I think they're probably decent folks, but at the end of the day, it's just like, if it doesn't work for you, it just doesn't work for you. And then if you don't choose to, you know, I agree with Aaron. I watch his videos, and I used to watch them back in the day, and you're right, Ted. It doesn't work for me. It's just something I don't want to do. And I think my very limited time online watching videos is much spent with the Adam Matlocks, the Shane Craigs, the Martins from Tech Alter, those kind of folks. And I think that really bring a lot of good energy to the table.
Sure. I just wanted to touch back on trade shows very quickly, because I think brands still see value in it. And Honor is an actual example of that at MWC. So for me, the actual star of the show was the V6, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's going to go global, and that's what everyone's going to actually be able to buy. But the show was the robot and the robot phone, because they're trying to build their brand. And they wanted the focus to be on Honor at MWC. And I think they've achieved that. They did quite well. I read an article about, like, a lot of people were asking who's Honor, because they still don't know who Honor are. So that's them trying to get their brand and their name out there. So, yeah, they still see value in these trade shows.
They've got to break into America, though, haven't they, Sam?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, unfortunately, we have, with Honor,
good luck with that.
The way it goes. Yeah, I mean, it's like the current administration, the current climate is probably not conducive to that kind of thing. So, and it's a shame, because I think at the end of the day, I think American consumers suffer, because I think that you're kind of behind the big three, right? Google, Apple, Samsung.
And Motorola are trying hard, aren't they?
Yeah, but I think they've also kind of, I don't want to say capitulated here, but I think they've kind of raised the white flag, like, hey, you know, I don't think so.
I think they're being measured, Sam. I think they're just, I think they just need, they realize they can't go all gung-ho with all their product. They need to be a measured attempt to break in there. They've done well with their Razor line.
The Razor Fold, they have said it is definitely going to come to North America. So you will get that one. Didn't you have the Samsung Galaxy Fold at one point?
I do. I still have the Fold 7. It's actually in the drawer. So, and I didn't get rid of it. I actually keep it, because I do want to keep a foldable. I'm glad that the Fold is going to be available, because I really like Moto phones. I've always been a fan of Motorola. I even told Joe, it's a shame when I say, if they have a Motivator program in the United States, if they ever stand it up, I'm first in line to sign up for it, even with the OnePlus and everything else, because I've had nothing but positive experiences.
You'll have to start reviewing phones.
the Nexus, exactly. Back to the Nexus 6, right? Back in an old Motorola device. Like, I've been on Motorola's band for a long time. It's just a shame, because I think the United States really doesn't get the same exposure to these other brands. And I think they're all quality, and they have their different quirks and they have their different stuff. But I think at the end of the day, the more you have choice and the more consumers have to pick and choose, I think it's always better for them. And it's just a shame that's kind of consolidating. It's kind of
blinking politics. That's what it is.
Joe, they said today, just in the last few hours, that the Razer Fold is going to cost, well, to be fair, it's the FIFA version. And we're not really sure whether there's a non-FIFA version. But the FIFA version of the Razer Fold is going to be 2,199 quid. What do you reckon to that?
I think that is not a good price at all.
Do you think there'll be a non-FIFA one?
Yes, there will be, because they've done the same with the Razer Flippy Dippy. There's a new World Cup version, isn't there? Because, I mean, that's not going to appeal to everyone, a World Cup version. No. So they've got to do a normal one. But, I mean, if that's that price, is it going to differ that much for the normal one?
I don't know because the flip phone FIFA version is exactly the same price as the other one, isn't it?
What specification is that though? Is that going to be like a terabyte?
It was 512 16 gigs on the UK website when I looked earlier, but there was no other options. There was no color options. That was it. It was that one model. Well, actually, it might be worth looking back now. Well, you carry on talking, and I'll have a look.
Yeah, you have a little look.
And I kind of miss that kind of stuff. I noticed that if you go to like things like Giztop or whatever, that in Asian markets and stuff like that, they'll have like a Dragon Ball Z version and a purple one and the McLaren OnePlus, like all these like really cool kind of. I would think that the United States, I think with people being so into like cosplay and gaming and anime, and there's a lot of people that would do that. Like I remember when Samsung had my daughter was big time into K-pop at the time, and they had BTS. Like it was like a purple Samsung. They didn't have foldables at the time or whatever. It was a purple Samsung phone, and my daughter was so infatuated. First of all, the color, but it was BTS because it came like stickers and card pack, and you know, I had to hear about all this kind of stuff. And luckily, she's gotten past all that, and she's 25 years old, so I don't have to deal with it anymore.
I've got good news on the fold, yeah. Sam.
Yeah.
In the UK, it's 1799.
Oh, is it?
Okay.
Yeah. Ah. Okay. You can press notify me at the moment, and that's 16 gig 512 as well. There's two colors, lily white and black and blue, available.
Well, I think somebody had said that when they were talking about pricing the US, it was at $14.99. That was what it was going to kind of hit the US at. If it hits at $1,500, I think that's pretty competitive considering the fact that you're folds and everything else, and you don't have a lot of foldables. That would definitely something I would catch.
Wouldn't it be more in the US though?
It might be. If it's $17.99, maybe in the United States. But here's the thing is, I mean, here's the problem that Motorola's going to run into in the United States. One, if they don't have it available in carriers as an upgrade and they're making it the same price, Americans aren't going to spend $2,000 retail at a Best Buy or a shop. I mean, and the problem is I think that Motorola has limited amount of availability for like AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, right? It's going to be a tough sell because it's a foldable, especially when you can buy, if you're at that point, you can get a fold, you know, you can get a Fold 7 from Samsung that you know, and it's got really good reviews, and it's the same price, or maybe now it's on sale because they're giving you some kind of a trade-in value, as opposed to I could trade this in and get it for $1,300 as a Fold 7 or spend $2,000 to buy a Motorola Fold straight up. It's going to be a tough sell. I think they're going to really run into a problem with that. And I think that's probably what they're probably running into, which is why they've kind of they're waiting and seeing and more taking of a cautious approach.
Yeah, they're probably debating deals. Yeah.
Americans aren't just going to go to Motorola.com and look that up. Most don't. Americans don't purchase phones that way.
One of the differences here between the Samsung and the Motorola Fold is the size of the battery. They haven't quite got the size of the Honor V6 battery, mind you, Joe, have they? It's going to be 6,000 milliamp hours on this Motorola Fold, but on the V6, it said 6660, didn't it?
So, yeah, that's it. Yeah,
it is going to be bigger. And the Samsung, I don't know, I think on the 7, it's 4,000 something, isn't it, Sam?
Yeah, it's right around that, like 4,400 or 4,500.
Yeah. And so they are kind of pushing boundaries a bit, and they've made the screen brighter and more. It's got IP69 rating, and it's got a 3x optical zoom and blah, 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 blah. They're just kind of pushing some boundaries with it, and as Motorola kind of do now and again, trying to make it competitive. But you're right. In America, it's just a very different market, and they've got to they've got to adapt, haven't they?
Yeah, and or they can do what a lot of companies have done and just basically said, you know what, the American market is closed to basically. I mean, that's kind of what Nothing has done, right? They really, they're not. You can tell that, you know, they're coming out with this phone, and I actually, as an aside, I think the 4A, I think that's the approach they should take. I think they should go for that, that market. But even in the United States, you know, I think the only phone that's available on thing on AT&T is the Nothing Phone 2 is certified. But like I said, they're not going to market to the United States because Americans aren't going to walk into a store and they're not going to know what Nothing is. First of all, they're going to think the name's a little weird. And then the second thing is they don't know anything about it because there's no marketing for it. They don't listen to shows like this. They just don't know about it. So they're going to go in there. And then you're going to have, and this is nothing against Joe, because I know he doesn't do this because he's a proper bloke, but a lot of times you walk into these stores and carrier people will talk you in and out of phones. If they are iPhone people, they'll talk you into an iPhone, partially because it's what they know. That's the default. But I think also, too, it's like I had one guy at an AT&T store told this guy he was looking at getting a Pixel. He's like, don't buy a Pixel. They're trash. They suck. Da, da, da. It's just, I mean, spent like 3 or 4 minutes just bad-mouthing it. And I'm sitting there with a Pixel in my hand, which is kind of funny. And I'm just looking at this guy, and he's looking at me, and I go, and I just pick up the phone. I kind of showed him the back of the phone. I said, it's not as bad as you think. And I said, and I look at, I said, do me a favor. Show him your phone. And the guy picks up an iPhone. I said, so do you really know? Did you use a Pixel for 25 minutes and said it sucks? Is that what you did? Because I think that's disingenuous. And I think that if you're a salesperson, your job is to be objective about, hey, this is what Pixels are good for. The software is this. I think Samsungs are great because it's a known brand and you can't lose with them. It's kind of like the default, right? And then if you want to go iPhone, that's okay too. If you want to stay with an iPhone, you know, you're not going to go wrong. I think those stores don't advocate. I think they kind of skew. And I just think that once they decide that a phone is not going to, I mean, OnePlus did it, right? They tried to do, I think it was OnePlus 8 in T-Mobile stores, and nobody upgraded to it.
I know this is not going to interest you much, Sam, because you probably won't ever see it. But the buzz at the moment today is around the Xiaomi 17 Ultra. One of our group members, Gavin Fabiani-Lemond, is itching at his doormat for it to drop tomorrow, I think.
yes.
And he's paid for the Lights phone as well. I sent him a message earlier, and I'm hoping that he'll come on the show and tell us all about it. But, Joe, you probably know a bit more about the specs and stuff of the Lights phone and all of this buzz, do you?
No, I haven't actually. I haven't looked into it.
That's the end of that then.
Yeah. No.
Well, fun fact, Ultra. Ted, Xiaomi is Joe's kryptonite when it comes to phones. Joe has no idea about most Xiaomi phones. He's never actually owned one. I think it's hilarious that I've actually owned two Xiaomi phones, and I loved both of them back in the day. Now, it's been a while. I had the Mi Mix 3. That was a little slider phone. That was my first Xiaomi, and I love that thing. I thought it was the coolest phone ever. And the other one I had was, and I took it on our trip to Puerto Rico back years ago, it was the Mi 11. It had the vegan leather back. I thought that was a great phone. So I love Xiaomi phones. I've had a little bit of exposure to them, and I love them. I think they're fantastic value for money. At least they used to be. Maybe it's different now, but I don't know.
So what's the difference between this Lights phone and the Ultra then?
Don't ask me. I thought that you would know about this. Let me give you the blurb from 9to5 Google. The Xiaomi 17 Ultra breaks new ground with the first 1-inch LOFIC, whatever that means, main camera sensor. The Light Fusion 1050L image sensor uses cutting-edge capacitor technology to significantly increase full well capacity, whatever that is, and enable next-generation HDR performance. Another key breakthrough is the Leica 200-megapixel 70-100mm camera featuring 75mm mechanical optical zoom. Built to Leica APO optical references, the telephoto camera maintains high image quality with minimal ghosting and color fringing across the entire zoom range and expands to a 400mm 17.2 times equivalent focal length, thanks to advanced sensor technology for outstanding long-range photography. So that's the blurb of the, presumably that is the ordinary one, not the Leica one, or the the lightsy one. We need Gavin on here to tell us all about it, don't we?
But the thing is, the Leica one, just much like in the camera world, Ted, it's probably a bit overpriced, I bet.
Well,
I think
it looks like on Giztop. I've just checked this while you guys were having to talk about it. So it's $1,299. And then there's the regular Xiaomi 17 Ultra. That's at $999. And I think that's all they list.
That's a good price.
Have a 17 Pro Max. Dude, the Leica for $1,299, if that's got all this whatever stuff you just said.
I've just found out that the lights phone, the one that Gavin's ordered, is £1,700. And it's got a badge on it that says Leica.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah,
well, is that any difference?
This one does too, to be fair. The 17 Ultra by Leica is what it says. This is on Giztop, so I've just literally just checked it out. It has a badging on it. It says Leica on the camera housing, and it's got the little Leica red logo with the little script on it, which is kind of nice. It looks like it's kind of like a vegan leather back, which I on the 11, I love that vegan leather back. But I noticed on the one, sometimes they have like color, and then they have options for storage. But then they had like one, it had, you could add all these kits to it. You can get like a lens kit and a thing, and then something you could probably make a brisket with. You could probably put it down and it'll like probably drive you to work or whatever. And it's like $1,000, right? But I don't know, man, $1,700 is kind of a lot of money. This actually is, you can pick it up right now for $1,299.
Yeah, because that's there's a Leica edition of the Xiaomi 17 Ultra, but this is a different phone, the Lights phone. I didn't know about this Lights phone. I knew about the Leica edition of the Ultra, but this is something different.
We need.
Well, you know what? Yeah. It's I'm curious to see what $1,700 gets you, but it sounds like it's bringing the noise, bringing the funk. Like, that sounds like a pretty good phone if you're camera enthusiast for sure. But I like Xiaomi. I don't know about $1,800. That's a lot of money to spend.
Why choose the lights version of the phone? Apparently, it's got a rotatable camera ring around the lens. It's got an M lens simulation with a Summilux lens, a minimalist UI. The software is stripped back, so it's got Leica essential mode in it, and it's got the red dot design. So I think Gavin did actually acknowledge that he was pushing the boundaries, and he almost thought, yeah, he was almost admitting to himself and to everyone that, yes, I shouldn't be doing this because there's not enough different about it. But he wanted to anyway, and good for him, because he doesn't buy a new phone very often, Gavin. Anyway, let's try and get him on the show, and he can tell us all about it, because we're floundering.
When did you
last have a Xiaomi phone, Sam? And did it have Hyper OS on it?
I think it had MIUI. I think it was back. Right, I think it was a Mi 11. It wasn't the Plus or Magic. It was just the regular Mi 11. It had like a light blue. I want to say 2020. 2021 in that neighborhood. The only reason why I remember it was around that time, because when we went to Puerto Rico at the time, we were right in the middle of the pandemic, so we had to fly with masks on and all that kind of stuff. So I'm thinking it was like the 2021 time frame, so about four or five years ago.
Right, okay then. So what else do we want to talk about? We've got the we've spoken about the Nothing Phone 4A, which is coming. We've spoken about the Samsung devices, which are a bit hit and miss. The there's a new iPhone been announced today, which is the 17e, is that right? And most people are kind of saying, well, it's a bit like the upgrade to the Pixel 10a from the 9a, and it's not very exciting, except that it's got MagSafe built in, which is new. Anyone know anything more about that?
Zero interest from me, Ted, as you know.
I mean, I'm trying, Joe. To include Apple.
I mean, I need to look it up because I'll probably have to sell a load of them. So I do need to look it up myself at some point.
Sorry, Sam, I mean, you were saying.
$600, and yeah, it's got one camera. You know, it's like, again, it's... I guess it's to me, is Apple at least trying to get to that, what they would consider an accessible price point, right? For people who aren't doing it. And I mean, at this point, it's like, okay, you can get the 17E, but couldn't you just get a regular 17 for like, what, $100 more? How much is a regular 17? Yeah, it's like $799, and you get a better phone, objectively a better phone.
Right.
I mean, if you're just shopping price and you want to save $100, sure. But I think at that point, if you're already in for $600, why not be in for $799 or $749 with a trade, especially with a trade? And if you go to AT&T, if you bring them a ham sandwich, they'll give you $1,000 off. I mean, they don't even care about the iPhones. You know what I mean? They don't even care. Like, bring us a phone. Is it even broken? We prefer it broken because every iPhone we sell has got a crack screen anyway, so we don't really care. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke. But I mean, at this point, it's like, at $799, you can get a brand new 17 with a better camera, better screen, all that kind of stuff. I mean, if you're really just shopping $200 in savings, I guess. But if you're, how many people are walking into a carrier store or a Best Buy and just buying the 17E straight up at $600? Mm-hmm. I don't think many are. And if you're, the difference is it's $33 for a 20 plan, right? $20. It's like, you know, for 24 months. But for that alone, it's 25. So you're basically at $7 in difference. Why not just get the superior phone? Unless you just want to have this one, I guess. But I don't know. Again, I'm glad that Apple's trying to push a phone in this market. But I think the compromise is too much for the price. And you can do what you want. But if you're financing a phone over 24 months, the difference is $6 or $7. I would just get the 17, arguably a better phone.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sam. Let me, before we go to photo of the week, I just want to throw it open to Joe's throws to see if there's anything you want to just mention. Joe?
Yeah, you'll be pleased, everyone. I'm going to keep it nice and short and sweet. My Razer Ultra review, 60 Ultra review, will be up on my channel tomorrow.
Hurrah!
My sim is finally going to go into the Moto Signature for testing and review, and my unboxing will be going live on my channel and probably end of this week. And thanks to all the support people have given with my channel, I do much appreciate it, and it makes it worthwhile. And that's it from me, really.
Yeah, well done. Keep it going, Joe. That's really good.
Thank you.
I've got some feedback to give on the Motorola Edge 60 Neo, which is almost all really, really positive. But we're running on an hour and a half now, and I'm not going to do it today. So we're going to jump straight to photo of the week. And we're picking up on this idea of perhaps picking more than one photograph. So this time, Joe's picked one, and I picked one. So we'll go with that and see where we are. I've picked Bristol Rain by Kevin Tett, which he took with an Honor Magic 8 Pro, and I just really like this photograph because it was like it's a street photograph at night with lots of different colours and lots of rain and reflections off the rain, and every single part of the frame is just filled with something interesting, and it's just packed with detail and stuff going on. And somebody in the group actually said that it would make a really good jigsaw, and I can see that it certainly would. A really lovely picture. I think so. Well done, Kevin. Any thoughts on that, Sam? Is it gone?
Yeah. No. It's like it's just there's except for the sky. There's really no like color that isn't, and then the right side with the buildings, it's just like it pops at you. It's like it's so colorful, and I like just the down the sidewalk there. It's just the reflections, and there's some people in the background and some cars, and it just feels like it goes on for like a mile of just the same kind of look. I think it's a really colorful photo, and they got this really bright urban thing on the left with the shop. I don't know, it's just really cool. I like it. It's really, really, really colorful.
Joe, any thoughts?
There's two things that make it for me. All the reflections of the lights everywhere is brilliant. And do you know what? That building with the pinky purple in the distance,
uh-huh.
that balances the image out nicely because you've got the pink at the front. And then, and I think if that wasn't that color there, it wouldn't be as good. But yeah, that just balances it out.
I didn't even notice that on the right side, that big whole storefront, that whole building front is the same color as that urban. It's really got
an eye for composition. Well done, Joe. Mm. So what was your pick?
So my pick is Daniel de Rocha. Hopefully I said his name right. New Brighton Lighthouse. And it's an actual iPhone shot, an Apple iPhone 17 Pro on the telephoto. It's a lovely shot of a lighthouse. It's like a leading line with the rocks going towards it as well. I quite like the muted colours. And what do you guys think?
Yeah, I quite like that as well. Apparently, New Brighton, I never knew this, but apparently New Brighton is somewhere near Liverpool. I'd never heard of it, yeah. So, you're right. The muted colours are really good and interesting, and it doesn't pop because that's not the kind of photograph it is. But the composition works quite well with the top left and the intrusion of the whatever building that is there on the left. So that's quite nice. Sam, any thoughts?
Yeah, I just like the fact that on the far one you've got that kind of dark band where it comes, you can tell there's a high tide, low tide kind of thing going on. Mm. And on this one it's kind of the reverse, right? It's a brown top and it's just this green kind of mossy look to the bottom. And they're probably right close to each other from the shot. They probably aren't too far away. But how these different, I guess this looks like a lighthouse. It looks like it's the same structure, but it may not be. Maybe it's a bulkhead or something. But how it's completely different. Like one's got a little bit of more banding and this one's not. And it's just a different contrast. And the rocks in front. It's really nice. It's really separated really great. I like the muted colors, like Joe said. It's really nice depth.
Really nice depth to the image with the foreground and framing with the – it's pretty good.
Very good. So thanks, Daniel. That's a good one. And thanks, Joe, for your pick. Before we go, let's just have a look at classifieds. If you want to join our classifieds group, you need to email me and talk to me about it. It is a members-only group, and we do try to protect the members there by controlling the membership. Joe, did you get a pick?
Yes, I've been a bit naughty. It's phone show chat, and I've picked two things that aren't phones, both from David Hewitt. There's a lovely little Marshall Willen 2 Bluetooth speaker. It's reduced down to £50. Very good-looking speaker.
Lovely.
And there's an Oppo Watch X2, which is quite similar to a OnePlus watch, actually. Yeah. He's reduced that down to £175. So that's my picks.
The Willen 2 is £100. I checked before the show. If you want to buy a new one, it's still £100. And the Willen 2 is an upgrade to the Willen, which is the one I've got. I really wanted to need to buy this, but I just there's so many Bluetooth speakers. I just don't need it. But anyway, it looks really nice.
Very tempting.
I'm going to go with Atmosing's Huawei P60 Art. This is the Chinese version, which is running Harmony OS, 512 gigabytes in Seashore Gold. And he's also throwing in a Huawei GT5 Pro watch into the basket. £270 the lot. And the reason really is just that it's something different and interesting. I would quite like to look at Harmony OS. I know that it's a struggle to get Google Play services, Google mobile services onto it. And I know that there's going to be roadblocks in terms of using it for all sorts of reasons. But I would still like to see Harmony S and play with it and see where I could go with it. So I'm kind of tempted with that as well. Harmony OS, interesting stuff. So that was my pick.
Maybe we go halves on that, Ted.
Yeah, perhaps we should. And we could
to play with.
Yeah. I've never seen it. But anyway, there you go. So there we go then. We're kind of done. We're on hour and a half, as I say, so we better get to bed or something. And we'll be back with another show in a fortnight's time, or maybe a week's time, if Gavin wants to come on and tell us all about his Leica phone, or Leica camera in phone. Joe, Sam, it's been great. I don't know why I keep calling Sam Joe. Sam, it's been great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us, and it's been great to hear your view on all those different subjects.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And I've looking forward to this for a couple of months now. So thank you very much for allowing me to come on. It's always been a pleasure and
great stuff.
A lot of fun. It's good always stuff. Great.
I'm glad that you enjoyed yourself. Joe, anything that you want to say?
Yeah, I guess I should re-plug the 160th show for Nomad Tech Project again. Nick, this Sunday, coming Sunday. It's great to hang out with my buddy 2 days in a row. Mm-hmm. Lovely.
Great stuff.
Yeah, I know. Twice the fun. We love it.
Phoneshowchat.uk is our website. Two S's in the middle of that, of course. So don't just put one in. If you want to buy me a copy, you can do that. It's at paypal.me/TedSalmon. And if you want to buy Joe a copy, it's at paypal.me/Hickey85. Other than that, join us in the MeWe group. Tell us what you've been doing with phones. And we can talk about that on the show going forward. If you get lost or want to find anything else out, the best place to go is probably at tedsalmon.com. Links in there to all of our MeWe groups, all of our other audio podcasts, and PodHub UK also has those as well. If you get lost, you can find that via Google, no doubt at all. And thanks to Steve for keeping that going, which is really helpful. This week we've got a Projector Room podcast coming along, so watch out for that one. And last week we had Camera Creations, so loads of stuff going on with podcasts for those who want them. And that's about it. So thanks very much for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you either next week or the week after. Thanks for listening.